The story that I saw this morning, for the first time, to be honest, even though apparently it is not a news story, is this was the headline: Israeli-American man detained and tortured in Lebanon. Okay? Dan Brotman, how are you?
Hi, Kathy. I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Okay, thank you. But I was so shocked when I saw that. I could not believe. I went onto our Facebook pages and, you know, I hadn't seen any reports. Are you okay?
Yes, I am okay. This incident specifically happened 2 months ago.
Yes.
And actually, the South African Jewish Report was the first outlet that reported on it.
Yes.
And it actually made it to the front page. And I'm very grateful for that.
I'm sure.
But that was almost 2 months ago.
Yes. So what actually happened, Dan? I mean, where were you going?
I think let's start by saying that I am a world traveler.
Yes.
And I'm actually reaching my 100th country next month, which
Whoa.
Is quite an accomplishment.
That really is.
I've traveled throughout I've traveled just throughout so many regions of the world, but in particular, I've traveled to the Muslim world quite extensively. You could call me a citizen journalist, so
yes.
I don't just travel to these countries for fun. I actually go to these countries and I report, whether it's on social media, whether it's in print publications. And, this has taken me from places such as Iran to Afghanistan to Algeria. And I've actually spoken several times at Limud South Africa about my travels to the Arab world. And in my 98 countries of travel thus far, this was the first bad thing that ever happened to me. Basically, I was part of the first large Western tour group to return to Syria since the December Revolution, when Assad was ousted. And I had been to Lebanon several times previously. I had written for the largest newspaper in Canada about Lebanon. I was there as recently as 2022. And even a week prior to my Syria trip, I landed in Beirut, we slept over, we left from Lebanon to go into Syria, absolutely no issue. The nightmare really began when we crossed back into Lebanon. I handed over my American passport, and they looked at the screen for a long time and they said, come with us. And there was, for a moment, I thought, wow, has the moment I've been dreading finally arrived after traveling to, almost the entire Muslim world? Have I actually been discovered? But I kept my cool. And basically, it turns out that they received information about my identity while I was in Syria. And one of the first questions that I was asked was, did you serve in the Israeli army? And when they asked that, I knew that, I couldn't lie.
Yes.
I knew that they knew.
Yes.
And then from that moment on, I was detained, arrested. I mean, my legal status was very unclear. I was transferred to several facilities and then finally to the equivalent of the CIA headquarters in Beirut, where I was held for 5 days. So in total, I was held for 6 days without legal representation. I went through the Lebanese legal system. There was a judge. I was never able to be in front of the judge. I was never able to have a lawyer represent me. I slept in handcuffs for the first few days. I didn't shower for 6 days. It was a really harrowing experience.
Did your family know?
Did
your family know? Had you been allowed to contact anyone?
No. So, I mean, that's a very good question. I mean, I think what was really hard was from the moment of my detainment, they took my cell phone away. So I had no way of contacting the outside world. A friend of mine noticed, he knew that I was leaving Syria that day. He noticed that I hadn't been on WhatsApp in like 10 hours. And so he suspected that something was up. However, when I was detained, I was with my tour group. So our tour leader, when I was detained, she came to my cell. They forced the group to leave the border area. And she came to my cell, the peephole opened, and she said, Dan, I'm gonna inform the U.S. Embassy as soon as I get to Beirut, and I'll also be contacting your emergency contact.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm very lucky, of course, that my tour leader was there, because otherwise I don't know how long it would have taken for people to find out. But I had absolutely no idea what was happening on the outside while I was detained. I mean, it got to the White House. My family was certainly involved, friends were involved, but I had no idea until I was out of Lebanon.
Just the terror of being anonymous, helpless. I mean, there's no rights. That's absolutely terrifying, Dan.
It was terrifying. I mean, the truth is, I could have been more terrified. So the department that held me is called General Security. And it actually, up until 2023, was very closely linked to Hezbollah. And my understanding is that department, according to the Lebanese constitution, still has to be run by a Shia Muslim. So, I mean, of course, you know, my family and friends were concerned that I could be assassinated while I was detained.
Sure.
To be honest, you kind of get into survival mode in a situation like that. So you don't really allow your mind to go to those dark places.
Yes.
Because if you do, you won't be able to sleep. You won't be able to function at all.
Yeah.
So for me, I tried to focus on other things, not on like the worst thing that could possibly happen. But I was with other prisoners who were treated much worse than me. Other foreign prisoners, there were two foreign prisoners who were denied consular access. I saw someone being led into a room and heard him being tortured. I wasn't touched. And of course, my American citizenship saved me. You know, a question that I asked myself was, I mean, I'm also a South African citizen, is, you know, if I had only been South African and Israeli, what would the South African embassy have done to help me? And how lucky I was to have a government that had leverage fight on my behalf. I met with the U.S. embassy twice while I was there. I know that the U.S. embassy didn't want Israel to find out, because that would have just made things even more complicated. And they said, you know, then you become a bargaining chip. And it was also complicated because President Trump was arriving in Riyadh. Well, he actually arrived in Riyadh while I was there. And he was going to be meeting with the Lebanese president. And in the back of my mind, I kind of knew that, like, Trump couldn't meet with the Lebanese president while an American is being detained like this in Lebanon. So I think that there was also luck on my side that it happened when it did.
Jeez. What was happening between Israel and Lebanon at the time? Because 2 months ago, things were very hot between them, weren't they?
Things were also very hot between Israel and Syria. When
yes.
I was in Damascus, Israel bombed Damascus.
Yes.
I actually slept through the bombing. I didn't hear it. I'm a heavy sleeper, but other people in my tour group heard the bombing. When I was in Syria, they started massacring Druze. That's when it really began. It was while I was there. And in response, Israel bombed a site next to the presidential palace as a warning. They also started shooting Christians while I was there. I mean, we were only there for 8 days, but at the beginning of the trip, we could go out to bars, no problem. But by the end of the 8 days, it was too dangerous to go out to bars because they started murdering minorities. So yeah, things were hot between Israel and Syria while I was in Syria. Of course, I know the background of what, you know, things were not good, to say the least, between
yes.
Israel and Lebanon. But to be honest, I was only transiting through Lebanon. So I think that I was probably more focused on what was happening in Syria than what was happening in Lebanon.
Right.
I do believe to this day that someone informed on me and proactively gave them the information about who I am. And I will never know who informed on me.
Mm.
But I do believe that someone did that intentionally. Because again, I had been to Lebanon several times before, as soon as a week before, without any incident. But there's some answers I will never have, and I definitely had PTSD when I got out.
Yes.
It took me about a week. I mean, there were, you know, initially when I got out, if I heard someone coming near my bedroom, I got really nervous because they used to come to my room and take me places. When you would hear footsteps, you never knew what was going to happen. When my interrogator's cell phone rang, you never knew what, like, new information they might have thought they found on me. And they had my cell phone and my laptop, and they went through my cell phone for 6 days, every single message, every single picture. And obviously I was very afraid of also endangering, you know, innocent Lebanese people whom I had met, you know, several years prior on other trips. But yeah, it was a very, very, very harrowing experience. And I just never saw it coming.
Did you get the story? Did you get the Syria story of the Jews, the last Jews of Syria?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yes. That's what you went there for.
Oh, no, sorry. I thought you were talking to your producer.
No, I'm talking to you. Did you get the story? Did you get the story of the last Jews of Syria? And I asked
this.
Yeah.
I mean,
No.
So basically, I mean, when I travel to these types of countries, I'm always looking for, you know, the last Jews living in these majority Muslim countries or remnants of Jewish life in those countries. So going to Syria, I really wanted to find the Jews that still live there. And I didn't know how I was going to go about doing it. So on the first day, I got our tour guide to take us to the old Jewish quarter. Now, over 4,000 Jews left Syria in 1992. So that's in 1992, whatever was left of the community left, Assad let them leave, and only 100 Jews remained in Syria. Hmm. So we went to the old Jewish quarter, which is obviously, you know, devoid of Jews now. And I started just asking people, are there any Jews that live here? And everyone said, no, we don't know of anyone. And then I almost gave up and decided to try one more time the following day, went back to the Jewish quarter, and one man said, yes, I know a Jewish man who lives down the road. Let me take you to his house.
Oh, my word.
So we went to the man's house, we knocked on the door, and he invited me into his home. I was with him for several hours, with him and a Muslim friend of his. And I learned so much about his life. I learned about why he decided to stay in Damascus. It turns out that today there are only 6 Jews remaining in Syria, 6. And this is an ancient Jewish community that's thousands of years old. And in fact, 3 Jews from the community died this year. So at the beginning of 2025, wow, there were 9 Jews in Syria. Now there's only 6. Him and his 2 sisters are half of the Jewish community of Syria. His 2 sisters married non-Jews. Some of his siblings went to Israel, the U.S., and Mexico, and he decided to stay in Damascus because he said, Damascus is in my soul. He was never married, never had children. He said that if he had children, he would have left Syria. But because he's a bachelor, he's a well-known tailor, he decided to stay. And then a week later, he took me to the Jewish cemetery in Damascus, which was also fascinating because they haven't had a rabbi since 1992. So whoever's left in Syria basically has to manage sort of an ad hoc Jewish funeral. So what they do now is they send the bodies to the Muslim community to get cleansed,
yeah,
purified, and then they just dig a hole in the ground and put them in the hole. There's no rabbi to conduct a ceremony.
Wow.
But it was fascinating seeing some of these Jewish graves were from this year, some of them were from a few years ago, from the 90s, from the early 2000s.
Have you ever been to Aleppo?
Really, really fascinating.
Have you ever been
to
Aleppo?
Yes, we did, and not only did we go to Aleppo, but I found the synagogue where the Aleppo Codex was
housed.
Oh,
my word. That must have been so special.
And I actually have a clip. If anyone's listening and they're on Instagram, please visit my Instagram. I did a clip about that. And actually, the synagogue is now completely rubble. It was destroyed during the Civil War. And my understanding is that the Aleppo Codex is the oldest, most intact Hebrew Bible.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was.
That's absolutely fantastic. Firstly, I'm so grateful that you are well, that you sound strong, that you actually go and you document these stories for us, because you are the eyes and the ears of such a big part of the Jewish world. So thank you for doing that, and I'm very, very sorry that, you know, you find yourself in trouble on our account. So stay safe.
Well, thank you, Kathy, for having me.
Really, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. And you can go and follow Dan Brotman. Go follow him on YouTube. Go follow him on Instagram and on Facebook. And go and see. He's a really fascinating guy. And he's always doing these interesting things. So go check him out. Dan Brotman, Brotman,